This is the Start Time Podcast. Here we go again.
Dave is also on it.
Dave, it sounds like you're in New York today.
Just another day, Brent.
Are you literally on the streets right now? Oh, there's the wind.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I am. I'm right in between the Hudson and the East River.
Sounds windy.
In the what they call FIDI or FIDI.
Oh yeah, I love that. I love that place.
Financial district.
Yep, financial district. And, so you're close to? Are you close to the World Trade Center?
Yeah, actually, I can see it right now. There's no buildings between me and it. It's
wow.
A clear view.
I know exactly where you are.
Because you've been here, Bran.
Are you close to the bull?
The bull?
You know, the bull, the statue of the bull.
Oh, boy. That's what you call that?
What is it?
Oh, bull. I think you meant bull as in like a cereal bull.
No, bull as in the animal.
No, that's more south.
Okay. Hey, I'm just trying to figure out, to picture exactly where you are.
Okay. I'm close to a Barnes & Noble, which is okay. My destination.
Oh, that's where we're going to record today. Dave, happy day. It is the middle of November, and we are excited today because we're going to have an interview from somebody who has a ghost or had a ghost in their house, and it is not Chuck Wenzel, thank goodness.
I love Chuck.
I do love Chuck.
I've had enough of him already.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about maybe trying to get Chuck on for an update maybe around Christmas time. We'll see what we can do.
If that's what the people want, we'll let them decide, right?
Yeah. Hey, Dave, since you're outside right now, what is it like right now weather-wise up in New York?
It's about 49 degrees.
Beautiful.
Sun beaming down, a light breeze.
It doesn't get much better than that.
It doesn't. And also, there's a lot of fall leaves everywhere. It's quite nice in that.
They've begun to fall, I'm guessing?
Yes, they have.
Good.
There's questions of winter right around the corner, actually. Ugh. But who's to say? What about you, Brent? What are you sitting in?
It's about 65 degrees.
That's good.
I have
That's
the window good. Open. I'm in the studio, but I have the window open. So if you hear cars driving by, it's not because I'm outside. It's just because I wanted to feel the beauty.
I'm pretty sure we're insured to have car sounds since I'm walking through the streets of New York.
So I'm guessing they hear more of your car sounds than my car sounds.
Yeah, so you've got an excuse. Is that what you're... That's what you're getting at?
That's what I'm getting at.
All right, well, let's see. I think I need to figure out which way is the entrance to the to this bookstore where I can have some peace and quiet for once.
For once in your life. Hey, Dave, I don't know if you've heard about this. There's a thing that people can do to help out our podcast. It's called subscribing and leaving a comment on iTunes.
That's what it's called.
That's exactly what it's called. And it'd be helpful if anyone would do it. We have, I think, one comment on it, and I think it was a little sarcastic. So,
you know what I think?
A little snarky, if you will.
I think that people need to just get off their high horses and get onto the comment section.
I'm so sick of the high horse.
It's like this thing that people get on and they think they look good up there, but really, just a load of horse manure.
Whoa! We don't have an E next to our podcast. Hey, Dave, we're getting closer and closer to Thanksgiving, and I'm beginning to get excited about it. And I don't know if you're a big Thanksgiving guy, but I'm hoping you are.
It's beginning to look a lot like Thanksgiving.
Everywhere you go.
The trees are dying, and the turkeys are getting ready.
Also dying.
Well, they're getting fat right now. They're really treating them well, probably.
Dave, one thing I've been talking about with my wife is...
my wife?
Whether or not we're going to give the old fried turkey a try. Have you ever tried the fried turkey?
I heard today from someone, my coworker, she said that they had Thanksgiving early. And she said that they had fried steak.
Fried steak?
Yeah, it was weird for Thanksgiving.
I've literally never heard of that.
Neither have I.
The fried turkey, though, I feel like is a big deal right now. So, I mean, I think I might give it a try, but it's totally up to you if you're going to give it a try or not. Dave, are you there or did I lose you? Dave?
Here. You like
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. You're back now. Hey, Dave.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey. I'm now in the place.
You're in the Barnes & Noble?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's great.
Does it feel quieter?
It does feel quieter, but your quality has gone down, if you can believe it.
I'm going to the window.
Okay.
Is it better?
Yeah, it is better.
Sometimes it's as easy as that.
I hope people really enjoyed that insight on podcasting. Hey, Dave, today we have a guest. Her name is Deborah, and we're going to talk to her after we go to the news. So let's get to the news. We'll come back. We'll interview Deborah about Ghost, and then we'll have a great time doing it. Sound good?
Mm-hmm. Oh, give me that news.
Here's the news.
For Starry Time News, this is Steven. First thing, Brandon, sorry I didn't respond to your text message. I got busy at work, and let me explain to you why I'm bad at texting. If I open the message and I see it, then the notification goes away, and I typically tend to forget to respond, like if I don't respond to the text. So then what happens is, next thing you know, I'm not responding, and then I forget, and then it's not just you, I do it to a lot of people. It's just something I've been working on, and I'll get to it eventually, I think. But for Starry Time News, this is Steven.
All right, we are back here on the Star Time podcast. Today, we are very excited to have with us somebody who says that they have had an entity in their house, and we're going to hear more of that story. This is Deborah Moffitt. Deborah, she wrote a book called A Deadly Haunting, which she wrote out of experiences that she had with an entity. And we're excited to have her on the podcast to talk more about what that is. Deborah, welcome to the Starry Time podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Did I say your last name correctly?
It's Moffitt, right?
Yeah, cool. Deborah, tell us a little about yourself before we dive into the entity.
Not much to tell about myself. Average life except for those 6 years.
Yeah, so you had something living in your house for 6 years?
For 6 years, it was in our house.
Cool. So I just want to hear the story. So just start from the beginning and start telling the story, okay. and then we'll interact and ask some questions as we go on.
All right. That sounds fine. Great. It's a very long story, so I'm going to condense it.
Great. Wonderful.
Okay. It started at the first location in Rancho Cucamonga on Archibald Avenue. From what the researchers tell us, this is how it started. Whether it did or not, we don't know. That's just speculation.
Sure.
My mother-in-law lived right next to her mother. She had a stroke, her mother. So she hired a Guatemalan housekeeper. They evidently practiced some type of Santeria, feathers, blood, strange symbols all over the house, broken rosary beads. So they've come to the conclusion that maybe that is how it all started.
So in the house, as you guys moved in or were looking at the house, there was remnants of rituals prior to that?
No. There was three houses together. My husband's house,
okay.
His mother's house, and the grandmother's house.
Okay.
My mother-in-law hired a housekeeper in the grandmother's house to take care of her. And that's actually where everything started, and it went to the three houses.
Gotcha. So it was in the one house, and it went to the rest.
Right.
Gotcha.
My husband and I lived with his mother and father. This happened, what I'm telling you now, with the housekeeper, before I even came out to California. So it's just hearsay. I mean, I didn't witness anything.
Okay.
When I came out here, my husband had a bad heart, so we moved in with his mother and father. We rented out his house on the other side of this. First thing that started happening was, I think we started getting reports. And up until that point, when I first came out here, nothing happened. We rented it out to the gentleman. We started getting articles that belonged to him up in my mother-in-law's house. She woke up one morning and there was a pair of men's briefs on her statue of Jesus. She had a chest next to her bed where she had all kinds of religious statues. She was very religious. We, at the time, we had no idea what was going on, you know?
Sure.
Where were these things coming from? We went down. My husband kept one room in that house where he had a large sports collection. So we had access to the house. We would go down periodically and check on the sports collection. We went down one day, and the door was locked to the room with the sports memorabilia. We opened the door, and on the floor, something had, or someone, we thought at the time, had taken all the bobbleheads, sports bobbleheads, off the walls and put them on the floor in the shape of a triangle.
Huh.
Now, that was the very first thing I ever saw. But even at the time, I didn't think it was paranormal. We just thought the guy got in the room and was playing a joke or, you know, touching things.
Right. So you thought it was the current tenant?
Right.
I'm sure that was awkward.
Yeah, so we confronted him. He said, the door's locked. I never go in there. It progressed a little bit from there, more a porch coming up to our house, till we finally figured out, because of the things that came, we started getting his receipts. We started getting more of his personal items. So we realized, and we had no idea even what a port was. Then all of a sudden, he decided to move out. He just left. He said, Friday, I'm leaving. By Sunday, he was gone. He had never told us anything strange was happening. He just left. We went up to clean the house. We went down, actually, because it was on the other side. We went down to clean the house. My husband and I went in. He went to his room to check on the sports. I was kind of looking around the living room to see what needed to be cleaned. And there was this long shelf that ran the whole length of the living room. And I looked up on it, and there was knickknacks across the whole shelf. And then I turned my back just for a second. It was just like seconds. And everything that was on the shelf turned backwards.
Wow.
And in the blink of an eye.
Huh.
So those were the things that it just started out. At the beginning, when we were still cleaning that house, we went up the next day. Because my husband didn't believe. I said, everything turned backwards. And he said, you just thought it did. Because he didn't want to believe it. And there was no rational explanation.
Sure. So what did you think at that point? Like, you had an explanation for the trophy room. You thought it was a tenant. But what did you think at this time when those things turned around?
I had never been associated with anything paranormal, so I couldn't understand it. All I know is I knew what I saw. I knew it was one way when I saw it, and then blinked an eye, and it was all backwards.
Hmm.
So I knew something was going on, but at the time there was no feeling of anything hostile or anything happening. It was just, you know, matter of fact, it was like nothing at the time.
Right.
It's just something strange that happened. Next day we came up to clean the house again. We went to the kitchen. When we came back out of the kitchen, dining room furniture was sitting in the middle of the living room.
Huh.
And these things would happen like within seconds, minutes at the most, and there was no sound at the time. You know, you didn't hear furniture being dragged or things being moved, but they were moved.
So at this time, it's just in that one house, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
It's in the rental.
Okay. So you're just in there periodically cleaning and doing all that stuff because the guy just moved out.
Right.
And looking back on it, do you have an explanation for why these things would have been happening? Like, was there a message that was trying to be sent, or just to spook you, or...
It wasn't to spook, because I think it was actually, because it became almost a game for me. My husband became very frightened, because he and his mother were very frightened of anything like this. To me, it was kind of amazing at first, because can you imagine you're in one room and all of a sudden the furniture moves to the other room?
Sure.
I was frightened of it. It was like, what's happening? You know, it was amazing to me. So it almost became a game. I would go into the kitchen and say, if anybody's here, move something. And I'd go into the other room, and a piece of furniture from a different room would be in there, or a lamp. So it would almost, you know, you could communicate with it. It had to be something that was listening, because it would do things on command. So it was almost like, look what I could do. It kind of got my attention. I wasn't fearful. My husband was. To me, it was amazing at the time.
So that would have been its purpose, you think, was just to let you know that it can understand and communicate?
Right, and just letting us know it was there and wanting the attention.
Right. So how long did it just do those little things before things began to pick up?
Did it for a couple weeks, then everything stopped. And then it started up again. At the time, we were going to be moving to a large larger house. The four of us lived together. We decided to sell the properties, all the properties, and move to a larger house. We weren't moving at the time to get rid of what was there, because at the time there wasn't a threat, you know. It wasn't like, oh, we got to get away from this. But it did progress later on. It, you know, more and more things started happening. Things started moving. Things turning on and off. Right. So my husband and my mother-in-law became very frightened of it. So moving at the time then became getting away from this. All the time we were down there, it never really did anything threatening to us, except the very last day when we were moving. The very last day, we moved to a house like 10 miles up on the hill, not far from where we lived. So we moved very slowly and put the other houses on the market.
Sure.
The very last day, my mother-in-law and I were down to the house. We were all by ourselves. When it started to show that it had a evil intent, we were in the bedroom packing the last box, and in the kitchen, we heard like a almost like an explosion, and we ran into the kitchen, and it had literally ripped the cabinets off the walls.
Oh, wow.
And all the wood was splintered all over.
Wow.
When we were in there, we heard glass breaking. We went back into the bedroom, and it had blown out all the windows in the bedroom.
Wow.
And I remember my mother-in-law and I remember grabbing her arm, and believe it or not, I actually picked up the box, and we ran to the car, got in the car, and went to the new house. Up until that point, towards us, there was never any evil intention or anything hostile, and it was like that point. At that point, it was like upset that we were leaving.
Sure. So let me before we dive into more that it was doing. What do you think led the entity? Because you said you had these remnants of rituals and stuff like that, and that was in a different house, correct?
That was in the house next to where we were living, my mother-in-law's mother's house.
Right. So what do you think led it to go? We're assuming it originated there. That's kind of where it came from. What do you think led it to go from that house where it started to this current house?
No one at that time. There was a gentleman. Actually, it was in all three houses. Little things were happening. We had a gentleman that we rented out the grandmother's house to. His son moved in with him. And a strange thing: my mother-in-law walked by this house, and the man, he was about 21, was in the backyard, and he was planting trees. But he was planting them, digging holes, and putting them in upside down. So, huh. I mean, strange things were happening in all three houses.
Let me ask you about that. Do you think that entity possessed that man to do that, or was he just a crazy old man? Like, what was that about?
No, he was a young man. He was like 21 years
okay.
old. Okay. He was. I had only met the man once, the young guy once. He seemed like he was all right. I don't know. I didn't see this happening. My mother-in-law did. And she was pretty unnerved by it. She said she was going to confront him, but he just stared at her. So she let it go and just went home.
So did this entity possess anybody? Like, did you see it possess anybody yourself or?
Later on when okay. we moved to the new house. Do you want me to go into that?
Sure. Well, let's back up. So we're about to sell the house, and things are happening, blowing the windows out and stuff like that. Let's pick up from there.
Okay. So we left. My mother-in-law, myself, we all now are living in the new house. And we still own the house down on Archibald, the three houses, because we put them up on the market to sell. When we first moved up to the new house, we thought, because everything was quiet, we thought, oh, we're okay. We got away from it. It was about 2-3 weeks, nothing. It was just so nice. Then one thing happened, and it was like a little warning. A picture was turned backwards. Now, to someone else, that would be nothing. You'd think, oh, someone, you know, turned it backwards, didn't even realize it. But it was like we knew, oh, no, it's back.
Oh.
And it progressed from there. It started moving things, doing little things. Then the most amazing thing happened. Well, my mother and father-in-law had the bedroom upstairs. My husband and myself had this bedroom, large master downstairs. And my mother-in-law one day was upstairs cleaning, and she called to me. And you could tell by the tone of her voice she was frightened. And I remember running upstairs, and she took me into her bathroom, and she said, look. And on the bathroom mirror was written, talk to me.
Huh.
Now, of course, the first thing you think is, well, okay, who wrote it? You know,
that's frightening.
Yeah. It was like, well, what happened? She said, I'm the only one up here. I was just bringing in clean towels. The mirror was clean a minute ago. I came in and that was written on the mirror. Well, you automatically, you think to yourself, well, someone in the house must have done this. So my husband and my father-in-law, we all were there standing. And I remember my husband said to me, well, what is it? And I remember reaching over and rubbing on it, and it was soap. It was someone had written on the mirror in soap.
Hmm.
So we said, well, which one of us did it? You know, because right. You think someone did it. No one else was in the house. The only way we could find out if it was one of us doing it, we cleaned the mirror, and we said, okay. We walked outside the room, and we just stood there and said, now, if something's here, and we're all four of us looking at each other, we know we're not doing it. We waited a few minutes, went back into the room, and there was more writing on the mirror. So we proved to ourselves right then it wasn't one of us doing it.
What did it say that second time?
Do you know what? It talks so much, I don't remember the exact words, what it
okay, so this time was something that it would continue to do. This is how it would communicate?
From the time it started, for 6 years, it continually communicated with us.
Hmm. Such an interesting way to communicate. It could communicate anyway. It could even probably speak to you, but it just chose to write on the mirror. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So after that happened,
with the soap.
Yeah, with the soap. What happened next that really began to alarm you guys?
Well, next for it pretended to be my mother-in-law's dead sister. And how it did this was, my mother-in-law had a nickname that only her sister used when she was little, and that was Nini. And the entity started calling her Nini, and it started warning us. It didn't want us to go into the attic.
So when you say it was calling her, he was writing Nini on the mirror? Is that what you mean?
Right. He was, writing Nini. Anytime he communicated, he never spoke to us or wasn't thought. It was in communication on a mirror with soap.
How do you think that the entity knew the name Nini?
I don't know. There's so many things that happened in that time. I don't know. I don't have any answers.
So I'm sure that was startling to hear the name to read the name Nini.
To my mother-in-law, it was almost comforting.
Really?
Because instead of thinking it was an evil entity, she now thought it was her dead sister trying to warn her about a danger in the attic.
Sure.
So to danger. Her, it was comforting. It was easier thinking of as her sister than that.
What do you mean by danger in the attic?
That's what he kept saying. He kept saying that there's danger in the attic. Don't go in the attic. There's a wire in there that can cause fire. And I remember my husband and myself, we were talking. We said, well, if it really was her sister, wouldn't she be saying, get help, there's something bad in the attic, you need to have it fixed?
Uh-huh.
No, this was trying to keep us out of the attic.
So did you ever end up calling anybody to come and check out whatever
right.
was in the attic?
We went in there, we checked, there was nothing in there. Well, then when we kind of showed what it was in the house, that we didn't believe it was her sister anymore, he kind of got upset. You know, he wanted us to believe that. So then he started to...
He being the ghost, right?
Him, yeah, he being Mr. Entity. He started...
Okay. Mr. Entity.
He started focusing all his negativity at my mother-in-law. I mean, he, from that point on, he just harassed her. He tore her clothes, cut them up, took them so she didn't have them. He took shoes so she would only have, instead of a pair of shoes, she'd have like four shoes that didn't match.
Hmm.
So she had shoes
That's
to walk
so
in.
That's so frustrating.
Right. He just, and then he started being very destructive to the house. He started cutting and gouging out. He had a symbol, and the symbol was a triangle, and it had like a wiggly tail at the bottom. And he put this symbol throughout the entire house. He even scratched it on our cars. It was almost like he was marking his territory.
Did you ever find out if the tenant that was there before ever experienced any of this? Did you ever find out if that's the reason why he left?
No, because we barely knew him.
Okay.
We just ran into him. And
yeah,
when
did he seem panicked?
Did he seem what?
Panicked, I believe, is what he said.
Panicked.
No, he just was like he wanted to escape.
Sure,
I got the impression he just couldn't wait to get out of there.
Yeah, I just asked because it was just like you had the triangle in the trophy room, which is apparently a symbol. So I didn't know if that was continuing to happen, and he just didn't tell you, and then that's why he left?
You know, I don't know. He just left.
Sure.
You know, it was just he never told us that anything was happening. He just left.
So he was beginning to harass. He was cutting up clothes, all that stuff. Was he ever doing anything physical to the bodies to you guys?
Not to me. The strange thing was, for some reason, I was not afraid of this entity. It was almost like I knew it couldn't hurt me. I wasn't afraid of it. So it was like my job became to protect my mother-in-law, because he started doing things like he could have poured things. He ported different knives. They weren't our knives. He put knives like under chairs where she was going to sit. Hmm. So if she would sit, she'd sit on a knife. Or he rigged it so that if she put her head down to go to bed, there'd be a knife in the pillow so she would stab herself.
Oh, gosh.
Why? So it became a constant visual protecting my mother-in-law.
Right.
Before she'd sit down, we'd have to check where she sat. But, you know, before she'd go to bed, we'd have to check the bed. So it was like just protecting her.
Why do you think it was only directed at her?
Well, eventually I found out.
Okay. Do we want to get there now, or is there more to the story up to that
point? Well, I was going to ask real quick. About the knives, are these knives that were from the house, or were they like random knives that were?
They were knives we never saw before. We actually had
gosh.
It was a box. We would just throw the knives in a box, and then when the box got full, we just threw everything away. Wow. We never saw these knives before. Some of them were brand new. Some of them were old. You know, we never saw them before.
Weird. Really weird.
That's unbelievable.
So you found out why he was going after the individual. Do we want to get there now, or is there more?
Yeah, you can, yeah.
Sure.
I tried to keep near my mother-in-law. If I was with her, the entity didn't touch her.
Hmm.
If she was away from me, she was vulnerable. So she went in. We were watching television. She went into the pantry to get paper towels or something. And the pantry was off the kitchen, its own lone little room with a door. We were watching TV. We didn't even notice her get up and leave. Then we heard screaming. We ran to the pantry door. It was, when you first turned it felt locked, but then it opened right up. And we found her just coming. The light was turned off, and she was starting to get up, clutching her neck. She said when she went in to get the paper towels, something had turned off the light and grabbed her by the throat. And you could actually see bruises starting to form on her neck.
Wow.
And I remember at this time I got very upset because it was so hard to protect someone from something you can't see.
Right.
And this was gone on for nearly a year now. And it was constant, the constant writing, the constant destruction of the house. It was just so much. My husband had a heart condition, so he couldn't protect the family.
Right.
My father-in-law was not a nice man. He didn't want to protect the family.
Hmm.
So it was like up to me to protect everybody.
What?
So
I was going to say, what made you stay? What made you stick it out?
Because I knew if we left, my mother-in-law would probably end up dying.
Oh, I'm asking why the whole family didn't get up and leave.
Because the entity went with us wherever we went.
Okay.
We couldn't get away from it. We moved once. If we went to a restaurant, this is how bad it got. He became our captor. If we went to a restaurant, he would move things on the table while we were there. Or we'd come home and the name tag from the waitress that had waited on us would be sitting on the kitchen table.
Wow.
I mean, he would show us that no matter where we went, he was with us.
Sure, that's
so
scary.
We couldn't get away from him.
Yeah.
So when he grabbed my mother-in-law's neck, I mean, it was just, I just had it. It was just like someone had to stand up to him. And I don't know where I had the nerve, but I did. I meant, it had gotten so bad that my mother and father-in-law moved from the upstairs. And at this time, we were all living in one bedroom, the master bedroom downstairs.
Wow.
So we all slept together and lived together in one room. That's where we were most of the time. And because we didn't go upstairs, he kind of took over the upstairs. The upstairs became the entities. You could start to walk up the stairs and you could feel him, this heaviness on the steps. So we didn't even use the upstairs anymore.
Wow.
When we stopped going upstairs, he started writing on the mirror downstairs.
Uh-huh.
So that we could see it, the guest bathroom. I was just going to say,
was it the brother-in-law you said that was not a very nice man?
No, my father-in-law.
Oh, father-in-law.
Yeah.
Well, I was curious. That just leads me to the question. Did you guys at first at any point like consider that there was some person that was doing this to you before you went to...
Of course. when you go through all kinds of speculation about what's going on. But then they're eliminated because it couldn't be. I mean, you could turn around and see things happening when you were the only one in the room.
Yeah, because that would be the thing that I would be freaked out about, is like if there's someone that's purposely trying to.
Right. Yeah, that goes, because it was a large house. So, no, we made sure that was, we eliminated that. Like I said, so I went in after it choked her, went into the mirror in the bathroom. And so you could communicate with it. At the beginning, the entity didn't really communicate with us as much as it spoke to us. Do you know what I mean? It's not like it would communicate. You could talk back and forth. It was more like it would listen to things we said and commented on the mirror or say nasty things like that. I remember my mother-in-law started to carry a Bible around with her, and the entity wrote on the mirror that the Bible was God's fairy tale. It would break off. She had a lot of statues of religious articles. It would snap off their heads, and it would always rip off their left arm on all her statues.
Why? Any theory why the left arm?
I have no idea, but it was always the left arm.
Interesting. So when you say that you were talking back, did you have to write on the mirror as well, or could you speak? And
That's it. You could go. You go in the, when you wanted to communicate with them, you'd go into the mirror, to the bathroom, and I would just. This is how I did it. I'd look at the mirror, and I would ask questions or talk to him. And I remember I confronted him that night when he hurt my mother-in-law, and I said, I said, you're not going to. I had a child, so we had a little baby at the time. Oh. I said, you are not going to touch my child. You're not going to touch my husband, and you're not going to hurt my mother-in-law. You're not going to hurt Lee. And I waited, went outside, came back in, and it wrote on the mirror, I will not touch the child. I will not touch your husband, but Lee belongs to me.
Wow. Before I get into that statement, did you ever see the entity write, like, could you see the entity write letter by letter, or would you have to always walk away and come back?
Mr. Entity never did. Very few things you could actually witness. Everything was done in a blink of an eye or when you turned your back. Once I caught a bed moving. I have actually a picture of it where I caught the bed moving. One time I caught, I remember watching as a potato came through the air, a raw potato hit my mother-in-law in the head. So there were very few instances of actually being able to witness something happen. It was always when you turned your back.
Yeah, and you said
so he would chuck potatoes at her sometimes.
He tormented her. I mean, I don't know how she didn't go insane. Yeah. I mean, she couldn't even have a wallet because he would take everything out of the wallet and then he'd tear it up and put it in a little pile on the table. He constantly harassed her.
And the worst part is that people did think she was insane probably when she would tell them these things, right? And
so here's what happened. That we became very isolated. My mother-in-law didn't want anyone to know what was going on. You have to remember, this was back in 1989-90. And it's not like now where people are more open to what's going on. She was an old Italian lady, a wonderful lady. I loved her so much. She thought people would think we were crazy if we came out with this. She didn't want anybody to know what was going on. So we became even more isolated because we weren't able to tell people what was going on. We weren't able to go to people's, like, at the beginning we would visit our friends, but he would make it so uncomfortable we couldn't do it. We went and visited a friend. When we came back home, the gentleman's wallet was sitting on our table. Mm. Now, how are we going to explain to this man why we have his wallet? You know, so he would put us in such uncomfortable situations that he isolated us, and then we isolated ourselves by trying to keep quiet about it.
Yeah. I mean, and you're especially isolated because you're all living in one room, which is like the ultimate isolation.
Right. It was a terrible time. Mm. But in the same sense, it was, when I think back about it, it was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Because can you imagine having something you can't see that can communicate with you, that can have a port? That, I mean, it was like, it was a fascinating. What was going on was so fascinating and so terrifying at the same time.
I want to ask, you said that you have a picture of the bed, which I would love it if you would send it to us. But do you have any pictures of the writing on the mirror?
Yeah, this is what happened. We'd have researchers. We had researchers from all over the United States come to try to get rid of this. One set would come and they say, document everything that goes on. Take pictures of the writing. Take notes. Do all this kind. So we'd do that.
Sure.
They couldn't help us. So the next researcher would come in And this person would say, now listen, you have to get rid of all these pictures and notes because you're keeping it here by having these things. So it was like up and down. When people would come and say, keep them, they would say, so we would end up taking, if we kept all the pictures, we'd have 1,000 pictures. So, but we ended up throwing them away because they told us to throw them away. But my husband, who was a hoarder, I found that when he passed away, he had taken some of the pictures of every set that we had thrown and threw them in a box. So I have like 300 pictures of what went on.
Wow.
The demon writing, the destruction. Now, some of the writing is hard. You have to remember, back then, it wasn't like when you have the digital camera now. You could take a picture and you can, that's not a good picture, take another one. I would just take pictures, and because of the flash, there'd be a little glare. Right. Some of the pictures are great. You can see everything. Some have a glare in them. Sure. But I do have over like 300 pictures.
Cool.
That's actually why I wrote the second book.
Okay.
The first book was I had someone write it.
Okay.
But it was written as a ghostwriter? Yeah. As a fiction book based on a true story.
I see. So it's the novel is A Deadly Haunting, so it's like a fictional, but it's using your stories. And then your book, Unwelcomed, is the nonfiction.
Right. And the reason I wrote that one, I wanted to get the pictures out there. I wanted people to see these pictures because they're absolutely fascinating.
Sure.
And then I ended up, when you try to tell a story about pictures, so I ended up writing a new book, exactly what happened. So the pictures are what's so fascinating. I have pictures of the writing, the destruction, some of the people that came to the house, the Warrens. So yeah, the pictures are really. And also, one of the things happened, this was another, to me, amazing thing. The entity started to demand, he wanted different things to happen. One night, my father-in-law woke up in bed with a start, and it was like 3-4 in the morning, and the entity had apported a spearhead into his bed with him.
Wow.
And it was about 18, there's pictures of it in the book, it's about 18 inches long, made of hand-forged metal. And I remember going into the bathroom and saying, well, what is this? And the entity, this time, decided he wanted a blood ritual. He wanted my father-in-law to use the spear on my mother-in-law and do a blood ritual.
Oh.
Yeah, so wow. I remember I took the spear and I put it away, and I still have the spear to this day.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
we definitely want pictures of that.
Yeah. We went to the museum, the Natural History Museum. I took it there. And the gentleman there told me, my husband and myself, that it was a spearhead from the Belgian Congo area, that it was over 200 years old. And he said by the way it was sharpened, he could tell what kind of spear it was. He said because it was the sides were not sharpened, it wasn't for hunting, and it wasn't for warfare. He said this type of spear, because of how it was sharpened, was used by shamans for magical rituals.
Wow.
So, that's creepy.
It is. And it was just, it's unbelievable to see it.
Yeah.
Wait, you said you took it to the Natural History Museum. How close did you guys live to that?
That is in Los Angeles. We're about 40 miles from Los Angeles. Okay. So it was about an hour's drive.
Okay,
cool.
I want to get back. So the mirror said, Lee belongs to me.
Right.
So I want to get into that.
Okay.
That's a terrifying thing to read.
And it was.
So what? Give us a little bit more information about what happened following that, that further put into place that Lee does indeed belong to him.
I told you that's how I communicated, just by talking, going out, coming. So he told me that. I said, "Why does Lee belong to you?" Because I wanted to know what was going on. That's the time he explained to me why he thought Lee belonged to him. He wrote the whole story. He wrote it. He would write a mirror. He would write the whole mirror. I would read it. I would erase it. I would leave. I'd come back. This went on for like a half hour because he told me the whole story. I can't remember it word for word, but the gist of the story was that my mother-in-law had been promised to him in a past life as a blood sacrifice. And it was in a monastery in, I think it was France, he said, way back like in the 15 or 1600s. And she was there were monks in the monastery that practiced Satanism. They gave my mother-in-law was going to be the blood sacrifice. Somehow, something happened, and the the blood sacrifice didn't come to fruition, and she got away or something. But he said it didn't matter that she wasn't killed then, because she was promised to him, she belonged to him, and he had come now in this lifetime to collect her.
Wow. That is amazing.
So we got a lot of stuff going on there. So that means that there's reincarnations, past lives, and Satanism all playing into one nasty situation.
So we're running out of time. So I do want to get into so Lee belongs to him as a blood sacrifice. Mm-hmm. What do you do with that information? And what do you do at that point?
Well, I remember when he told me that on the mirror, I said to him, "I'm not going to let you hurt her. You're not going to have your blood sacrifice." And he got so upset, he blew all the windows out in the top floor of the house.
Well,
it was like an explosion.
This is the second time, right?
Right. This was
the second time the windows.
This is the new house. This is the new house we're in. He just blew all the windows out in the upstairs.
What do you do? I guess my question is, what's stopping him from just doing it? Like, why do you think that he's waiting for, like, your permission for the blood sacrifice? Like, at any point in time, he could come and kill her. So what's stopping him?
This is my own theory, because I don't know. This is from living with the entity for, like, 6 years. This is what I got out of it. I believe that he wanted her dead, but I don't know if demons or whatever it was have a set of rules, too. But I don't think he actually could kill her. I think he could drive her to suicide. I think he could scare her to death or startle her and she'd fall down the stairs. I think he could harm her, you know, like grab her neck, but I don't think he could kill her. I think there must be some kind of rules. He wanted her to kill herself, or he could use somebody else to kill her.
Do you think that's why he was only able to leave knives like where places like where she would sit? So he's technically not the one killing her. She's
right.
Kind of falling into it, if you will.
Right. That's my own theory because that's what I saw. I saw this entity pick up. We had our truck was in the driveway, and the entity picked up the truck. And when I say picked it up, I didn't see it, but he took the truck from our driveway, which was it was in park and it was nighttime, and put it in the middle of the road. Hmm. Now, an entity that can pick up a 2-ton truck and put it in the middle of the road has enough energy and power to grab somebody and break their neck if
absolutely.
He wants.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But he couldn't. Because I think even in his realm, there's some type of rules. I don't think he could actually kill her. I think he could, like I said, influence someone to do it, scare her to death, or have her want to commit suicide. But I don't think he actually could take her life.
Because I was going to say, originally I thought the other thing that seems as common is that they can't ever do anything when there's actually anybody there. Like he has to do it when they're not looking. Except that you said that there was the one time where she went in the closet and got strangled. So I guess that there is no rules on the like about ability to touch. But that kind of does remind me actually of Job in the Bible, because Brandon, you probably know this one, where he is like this guy that is supposed that Satan wants to tempt to curse God or something like that. And then God says, you can do whatever you want to him, but you can't kill him. And so he just like does everything he can in every other way, but he can't touch him. And then that's kind of reminds me of this situation where anything but kill.
Right. That's what I think. That's just from living it with for 6 years and what I observed.
Sure. So let's get to the end here. How did you end up, because you said it was only 6 years, so somehow you must have gotten rid of him. So how did you end up getting rid of him?
One of the reasons we couldn't get rid of him, we had people come from all over the United States.
I mean, you've got an amazing list of people. You've got Ed and Lorraine Warren, Brian Hurst, Carrie Gaynor, like just an amazing list of people that are well known that came to your house to check this out.
Right, help. They couldn't get rid of it. Even Dr. Evelyn Paglini, who was an awesome lady, she couldn't get rid of it. And the reason why she said we couldn't get rid of it was someone in the house was giving it permission to stay.
Huh.
She said, if someone in the house gives an entity permission to be there, you can't get rid of it because it has permission to be there. And it's a long, complicated story, but it turns out my father-in-law, who was not a very nice man, was actually was encouraging the demon to kill my mother-in-law.
Whoa.
So not only was I protecting her from the demon, but then I had to start protecting her from her husband. Because he wanted her, he got to the point where he just didn't want to be married to her anymore. And she was not wealthy, but she was well off. And He wanted the money. So he decided, well, if the demon's here, he would try to encourage the demon to hurt her. So we finally had, she was an old Italian woman which she believed in marriage. She didn't believe in divorce, but we finally had to have her, my father-in-law had to leave before the entity could leave.
I wonder why the entity didn't, so going back to your theory, here's kind of a problem with it. Like, what was stopping the entity from communicating with him to tell him to kill her?
He did,
but he just didn't want to kill her because he didn't want to go to jail.
I remember one time my father-in-law said to one of the researchers that came, he sat at the table and he looked at him and he said, "Now listen, if for some reason this entity influences me and I kill her, do I have to go to jail?"
Now, yes, you do.
He didn't say, "Help us get rid of this so I don't hurt my wife." He wanted to know if he did hurt her, did he have to go to jail?
Wow.
So, I mean, that's the kind of mentality he had.
Right.
Well, once we got rid of him, the entity was still there. I mean, it's not like when he left, the entity left. The entity was still there. But the entity kind of changed. He loved to communicate. The entity would communicate morning, noon, and night. It was a constant going in and cleaning the mirror to talk. Well, we had one researcher who came two or three times to try to help us get rid of this. And he was kind of down and out on his luck, not happy. And he decided, because he realized how powerful this entity was, that he was going to ask the entity when he left to go with him. Now, I remember saying to the entity, "Okay, now you have to leave now. You have to go. If someone is asking you, actually giving you somewhere to go, you can go with him. So you have to go with him." And the entity wrote on the mirror, "I will not work with an inferior being." So he didn't want to go with this gentleman, but he ended up leaving with the gentleman. He ended up going with him, and the last thing the entity said on the mirror was, "Goodbye, my family."
Wow. So have you heard from the man who took the entity with him?
Oh, yeah, we kept in touch. The entity went with him at the very beginning. He told me when he first moved, the entity put his triangle on his front door. So he knew he was with him at the beginning. But then the man said he thinks he left and he would never talk about him again. Whether the entity's still with him or not, I really don't know. I don't think so, because the entity hated him. He didn't want to be with him. So
I wonder what happened to him.
You loopholed him out of your house.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to the end. He's never been back. Nothing has ever happened in over 25 years now. It's been completely...
You might have explained it, and I might have just missed it, but why do you think your mother-in-law was promised as a blood sacrifice? What would have happened to the entity if he actually did get that blood sacrifice?
I don't know. I never discussed that with him.
Yeah.
It was more of, I'm here to take her now.
Right.
That wasn't up for discussion, I guess, right?
Very interesting.
It was an amazing time. It was a terrifying time, and it was an amazing time. I can look back at it now, and I'm not emotionally attached to the situation. So when I look back at it now, I can see how absolutely amazing this time was.
Yeah.
Communicating with this entity from another realm. I mean, I just stop and sometimes even shake my head. It's like, I can't believe it.
Yeah. My last question is, you know, he wrote on the mirror when he left, "Goodbye, my family." Do you think that the entity is able to have feelings and is able to care and is able to love? Like, do you think he actually grew to have affection for you?
Well, you know, this is funny. Once I confronted him and I told him, I said, that's how I started calling him Mr. Entity. I said, "I'll show you respect. You show me respect. You're not going to hurt my family." When I did that, our relationship changed. At that point, he would start talking to me. He would tell me, because I would talk to him, because if I communicated with him, people say, "Well, you shouldn't have." But they don't understand. If I didn't communicate with him, he destroyed the house. He went after my mother-in-law. If I communicated with him, it kind of used his energy to communicate, and he loved to communicate. He would tell me things about the past, the present, the future. He told me stories about people from history. I mean, it was an amazing time. Amazing.
All with the soap?
With the soap. And it became, it got to the point where he started bringing me gifts.
Whoa, what kind of gifts?
He brought me, He brought me, I love rocks. I mean, just regular old rocks from the ground for some reason. I just like rocks. He would bring me all kinds of rocks. If I went someplace, like we went into it when we were still looking to get rid of him, even though we know we were communicating everything, we still never stopped our search to get rid of him. Yeah. And I remember when I went into one magic store and there was this beautiful jade triangle pyramid. And it was like $200-$300. And I remember telling my husband, gee, that's so pretty. And I came home and he had brought it and put it on my sink for me.
Did he ever leave you any presents under the Christmas tree?
No, not on the Christmas tree. He always left them in. When he left me presents, he'd leave them in my bathroom.
Oh, so, boy, right in the sink.
So interesting. Well,
did you ever – here's what I would just say. If I wanted to go, I would just say, you know what? Get off your soapbox.
There it is. Hey, Deborah, we do want you to be able to plug where people can find more about you, get your book before we let you go. So let people know where they can do that.
It's Unwelcomed. The True Story of the Moffat Haunting, and you can get it on Amazon. The fictional version is A Deadly Haunting. The Unwelcomed, what is great about that, I think, is the pictures.
Right.
Because the pictures, I mean, you can see what the entity writing, the destruction, and his symbol. And to this day, we don't know what that symbol sure. means. So,
maybe if you can send us a couple of good pictures, we'll put them on there, and maybe people will be like, I want to see more of those. So,
okay, yeah. I gladly will.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us in the Start Time. Very interesting. Great story. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. You have a great day, okay?
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
All right, bye.
All right. That was just a great interview. Deborah Moffat. Man, I can't get over it. Such a fun story.
It's the one that you can make a movie about, right, Brian?
Yeah. It would be a pretty good movie. Like, I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't have been a good movie.
It really did have – you had everything. You had – I mean, she even presented – like, she, you can tell that she, like, kind of has thought about this in story form because
she's probably
added a narrative to it.
She's told
this
story a few times.
Right. But she started off, I mean, like, with the mystery, like a backstory of this, you know, a ghost that comes from somewhere, has origins, and then it has her as a main character kind of realizing that it's not friendly anymore. And then you have the finding out what the ghost's intent is. And then you even have the twist at the end when you find that there's the husband or the father-in-law is the one that keeps it there. I mean, it just has everything.
Right.
All the elements. And then it even has the climax where, like, it wants to, like, she kind of befriends it, and then finally they have, like, the, oh, I'm not going to leave them alone, I want her, and then, the reason for it and everything, and then the final goodbye is even kind of poetic, where it's just, like, goodbye, my family. Like, that's the whole thing is very poetic.
Like, you know, that's the only ghost story I've ever heard where it leaves and, like, seems to leave on relatively okay terms. Like, it's a really, like... I feel like he wasn't being sarcastic when he said that.
Yeah, sarcastic ghost. That's difficult to deal with because it's hard to hear the tone of a ghost.
Well, I don't need your sass. Hey, Dave, as skeptics, we got to talk about this. As skeptics, as people, we would say we don't really believe in ghosts. Like, we believe in demons and stuff like that.
Right.
But what do you make of this story? Do you think it was a demon? Well, do you think it's real?
Here's why I tried to not sound like I was trying to eliminate people. By the time that it got to the point where at first I was like, well, if the father-in-law is – the reason she says mean, she must have a reason for that. If he doesn't have any desire to want to stop this, he seems like he could be potentially the one doing something or involved with it. But then she kind of blew that off. But then what she said that kind of eliminated a lot of people was when she said that the ghost would write in whatever language – that the mom was speaking, that left it to the mom and her husband. They're the only two that could speak that language. So it either was a ghost or one of those two. You know what I mean? Like there's not a lot of, it's not like it would have been easy for some prankster to come in there and just speak a dead language.
Right. But was there anything in the story that made you feel like she was just making it up? Like, one of the reasons we started this is because, at least for me, like I thought, there can't possibly be this many crazy people. Like, these people have to be sincere when they're telling these stories.
Well,
for me, also, I thought... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think one of the things we've also agreed on is that we don't think that there's that many liars out there.
Right.
As much as we think, is it possible that there's that many people that are just have had weird things happen to them that they really do believe it, but those things can be explained by other things. Because I think that's a more common, or not more common as in the only thing I've seen, is that those the people that have these situations, like, I usually can sense that there's some weird thing happening that they just are misattributing to ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. And she seems sincere enough.
Yeah.
I mean, but I don't know. I hate to ever say I don't believe someone, what they're saying to
right.
me. And so I would like to say, sure, I believe what she's saying.
Sure. I would say.
I don't buy the story.
Yeah. I would say, I would chalk this one up to maybe helping me believe. Like, we've had what, nine? This is our 9th episode, 9 interviews now. And some have made me wonder, like, maybe there is more. And I think this would be one of them. Not all of them. Not all the interviews have made me think that. Some of them have left and just think they're crazy or whatever. But
what religion is it, Brandon? That's where I was a little confused. What religion would it have been that is... Well, I guess it doesn't really matter what religion. What reality is it in which somebody that's practicing Satanism can summon these demons, but then also have in play with that, like, reincarnation and like Buddhist,
yeah,
and like all this other. It's just a weird culmination of a lot of things. It just seems kind of sloppy in that way.
No,
it doesn't fit nicely anything.
I would say, like, I don't think it doesn't have to necessarily be reincarnation. So it could be.
But I thought she said that she was paying for the punishment of a past life. Didn't she say that? Like, that's
well, I think she. I think she just meant a past life of somebody, maybe somebody in the family. So it could be someone way, way back.
Yeah.
Like, and the entity could even be a relative. So something could have happened, and like, and I'm assuming the practice was Satanism. So they're practicing something, and they say, maybe he's been cast into something, and in order for him to get out, there has to be someone in his family that's a blood sacrifice.
Gotcha.
So I don't. That's just my assumption. I have no idea, but
right. Which one is it? Well, would actually that be Hinduism? Is the one where the reincarnations, right?
There's Buddhism, I think.
It is Buddhism.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I know Buddhism.
Hinduism is. I want to say you're trying to get to Nirvana. Or is that, I don't know. And Nirvana is just nothingness. It's just complete peace.
Well, I mean, either way, like, the whole point of reincarnation was that you keep going into reincarnation until you
right.
live the life that's perfect. So, I mean, they
that's
either,
true.
I think there's two different kinds, but I just, for some reason, am blanking on that. Maybe it's because I'm walking through New York right now, but I'm just not able to.
Just ask somebody. They know in New York, let's be honest.
I don't have time, Brian. I got work to do.
That's true.
Great,
great fun today. Thanks for hanging out with me.
Brent, as always, my pleasure.
We got to do the normal plugs. Actually, next week's episode is going, I'm going to be out, and Nathan from, Eat Perchance to Dream?
That's the one.
Will be filling in for me. We got a great interview next week. It's another ghost episode, so look forward to that.
I was gonna see if we could just see how long, like, see if Nate could pretend to be you.
Yeah. I guess we could do that too.
Well, now we've warned you that's
yeah,
what's
it's true. But this last episode of Eat Perchance to Dream, Preston Dennett from our first two episodes is on, which is just it was a good fun, good episode.
I love that guy.
We'll be back next week. We're excited about continuing to look at the world and stuff.
From many a lens.
From many a lens. Hey, Dave, from Greenville, South Carolina.
Okay. Well, Brian. Yeah. And from New York City.
This was the Story Time Podcast.
This is the Story Time Podcast.
Bye.
Andrew.